Hello, my name is Valerie Coleman, and I'm the host of the College of the Ozarks podcast, Our Story. The vision of College of the Ozarks is to develop citizens of Christ-like character who are well-educated, hardworking, and patriotic. From passionate professors to first-generation college students, each one has left what is easy and known to reach for something more. Their stories are inspiring. Some of them will bring you to your knees. Some will make you stand and cheer. Step into the shoes of the cycle breakers. You won't regret it, and you just may come away inspired. Welcome, everyone, once again to the College of the Ozarks podcast. I have with me today an esteemed colleague and friend, and we've worked together on a few things, and man, it's been a busy time and a busy road for Dr. Nathan Roberts, but we are so happy that he's here and is taking a little time out today to share with us. He actually serves as the chair of the Division of Agriculture and Natural Sciences and also serves as Assistant Dean of Academic Programs. He's the Associate Professor of Conservation and Wildlife Management at the college. And man, that program has grown. There have been a lot of advancements in just the last few years. Dr. Roberts, thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you, Valerie. I'm very glad to be here today.
Good. So tell me, first of all, for our listeners, how long have you been at College of the Ozarks?
I came to College of the Ozarks in 2020, so right in the middle of the pandemic.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. So I'm in my fourth year now.
Okay. So, and that's what I thought. So not a real long time, but a lot has happened and a lot of growth in your program and now taking on another role at the college. So you seem to really love being at College of the Ozarks.
I do. I really love being at College of the Ozarks. I feel very blessed to be here.
Well, tell us more about your role specifically with the Conservation and Wildlife Management Program, and what are the things that brought you career-wise to this place? Because you are uniquely positioned to do this at this point in your career, and I know the students are just eating it up. That program is growing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm relatively new to academics, so and throughout my career, I worked in the field of conservation wildlife management as a professional in many different roles, and I'm able to bring some of that into the classroom now, but I honestly never envisioned myself as being an academic. I went to school long enough, and I really did not have a lot of interest in academics. Prior to coming here, I had roles with different universities, and I still hold some roles with other universities where I can have graduate students and work with postdoctoral students, which are postdocs or students that went all the way through to a doc, and then they decided they wanted to stick around longer, so they're doing additional studies. And I've worked a lot with at that level, but never at the undergraduate level, the bachelor's degree level. And I really didn't have that much interest in that until I came to College of the Ozarks, visited College of the Ozarks. So I was working in Wisconsin for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. I was a research scientist and worked and managed the wolf, bear, and fur bearer program for the state of Wisconsin. So statewide responsibility on those species, which is about 23 species, all very contentious types of issues around those. And at that time, I visited College of the Ozarks with my daughter, who was looking at colleges, and we were looking at a variety of colleges. And we came down here. I'm originally from this area, so we were in the area visiting family, and stopped at College of the Ozarks. And I was just struck by the college, by there's the beauty of the college, but just the uniqueness of the college. And I've been on a lot of academic campuses across the country, and College of the Ozarks is different. It's unique. It's a different institution, and you can see that there's the mission, and they actually live out the mission at this college. Mm. And to me, that was very appealing. And so I visited with my daughter, and I had visited some other schools as well with my daughter, and she did not go to school at College of the Ozarks, but When I visited other schools, I would often reach out to the deans or somebody in administration there and ask if there'd be an opportunity to give a guest lecture or something while I'm visiting with my daughter. And so I'd reached out to the school here asking about that, and there really wasn't opportunities for that, but I felt sort of led to ask the dean of the college to let me know if they ever had an opening.
Wow.
At the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that sort of on a whim, but I felt called to do that. And I have all sorts of degrees and can teach different sorts of things. And one of the things I had mentioned to him was math, because I thought it's probably way more likely to need a math professor than anything else. And he had said, no, we don't have any openings in math, but we do anticipate an opening soon in the Conservation Wildlife Management Program. And so that led to continued conversations that ultimately landed me at College of the Ozarks. I just feel really blessed to be here.
My goodness, it's so encouraging to hear how we can think that we're going down one path for one reason, and God just uses that and opens a door. And now here you are as an instructor at C of O.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah. And, you know, throughout my career, I've done all sorts of things, and some things I've done well and some things I haven't done well. And all those have been learning opportunities. And many of those I can bring into the classroom. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I teach about things like Endangered Species Act. And that's something that I've dealt with a lot in my career. And so I could talk about just real world examples mm-hmm. of how that act influences what we do in the policy realm. Or I could talk to students about, what do you do when you get sued? If you work for the government, at some point you're going to get sued, particularly if you work on contentious issues. And so I could talk to them about that from a standpoint of actually being in those shoes and having those sorts of experiences. So
yes, and better for you to go yeah. down the path and really tell them what it's like and, sure. and what to expect and beware of. And the more knowledge is power, right? So
that's
the more
right.
that we know and the better prepared we are.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about even just recently being in front of Congress and helping with some of those management type issues.
Yeah, I you know, in my career I've worked a lot on contentious issues, and it's not because I particularly love the debates with that, but I've always viewed the contentious or controversial issues as an opportunity for research. Like controversy thrives where there's a lack of information. And so to me, as a researcher, those are areas that are really ripe for research. And so in my career, I worked a lot on the group of animals we call fur bearers. And what a fur bearer is animals that are traditionally hunted or trapped primarily for the use of their fur. So these are things like coyotes and wolves and bobcats and river otters and beavers. And there's about a little over 20 species that we consider to be fur bearers. And so I've worked a lot on those issues, ranging from international trade and some of the treaties that we have with other countries that facilitate the fur trade to estimating populations to figure out how many animals that we have and how many we can take in a sustainable way, provide hunting and trapping opportunities in a way that's sustainable so that people can use a resource, but they use it in such a way that future generations can also use it. And so I've worked a lot on those things, and I always found it important to publish work when you do, particularly when you're doing novel work, to go through the process of getting work published. We call it the peer review process, which is very, very humbling. So you write up a paper, you think you did a fantastic job with it, you send it to a journal takes it, and they send it to three or four experts in that area, and their job is to look for any flaws in it. And if your work was solid and it's repeatable and based on sound science, and it ultimately gets published in a journal. And I've done quite a bit of that. I still do a lot of that. I have a couple papers that are coming out here soon on wolves. And having that publication record has helped me have credibility to work with agencies as they address some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I still do that quite a bit. Just in the last week, I was talking with the state of Vermont on an issue that they're having with the types of traps that they use to capture beavers near roads. And I've worked with Montana in the last month on some other issues related to wolves. And so I frequently get asked my opinion and to help them navigate some of these tricky issues. And last year I had the opportunity to address Congress on the issue of wolves and whether wolves should stay on the Endangered Species Act or be removed from the Endangered Species Act. And I found that very honoring. It was stressful, I could tell you that, because, you know, politics are always split. You know, it's very polarizing. And so you have half the room that really likes what you're saying and half the room that hates what you're saying. And politicians are often, you know, just looking for sound bites. And so it's a little tricky, but I felt honored to be able to do that. And I suspect that I'll continue to have those sorts of opportunities. And, you know, what I really enjoy about that is tying that to what we do in the classroom, because at College of the Ozarks, we're a teaching institution. We're not a research institution. Mm-hmm. We're a teaching institution. And so what we do for research or other sorts of professional development, I feel like that needs to tie back into the classroom. And so that experience, while I was talking about wolves in Congress, I was also teaching a mammalogy course, and you know, wolves are mammals, and so we were able to talk about how some of the biology of wolves plays into this. And I was also teaching a natural resource policy and law course, and so we were able to talk about the way that federal policies are developed in Congress and be able to use that as a real-world example. My students were able to watch it since it was live streamed, so they were able to watch me do things well, and then I honestly hope they see things that I do that I probably could have done better, so that they can see that as well. There's going to be times that they say things that maybe later they think they could have worded better, and if they could see that in the professors, that we all do that, I think that's helpful for them as well.
Wow, absolutely. Those stressful situations, that brings out the best and the worst, how you navigate that and to do that with their eyes on you and just to hear their feedback, I'm sure that was very enriching for them. Tell me a little more about the program, and maybe when you first came to C of O, what things did you see that you had as goals, and then the growth of the program?
Sure. Well, the program it's called Conservation and Wildlife Management. When I came to C of O, I replaced a professor who retired, Bob Snyder. And Dr. Snyder had put a lot of effort into developing that program. And so I came in, and we did make a few changes to the program. Just like every program and every discipline evolves over time based on what industry needs are. And I came into it from being in our version of industry, which is government work. And when I was in government, I did a lot of hiring for positions as well. And we would often see somebody that we wanted to hire, but we couldn't hire them because of some sort of roadblock. Like there was some course that they were missing that kept them from having a certification they needed. Like little details like that are really difficult for an 18-year-old to know how to navigate. And so one of the goals I had when I came in was to try to make it so that our students, by the time they graduate, they have taken all of the coursework required to be considered for federal employment.
Mm-hmm.
Because the federal employment's the most difficult to achieve. And also to be able to to apply to be what's called a certified wildlife biologist, which is or what most state agencies are looking for. And so we looked at our curriculum and modified our curriculum, made some courses required that weren't required before, and created some new courses to be able to match current hiring requirements to try to make it as easy as possible. I liken it to every time I go to the DMV, it's really complicated. And I never, for some reason, I never get it done in one trip. I show up and there's something I'm missing and I've got to go back, and then I come back again every time.
Sounds
every time
familiar.
It happens. And getting hired in the federal government is just like that.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, if you have a real clear checklist of what you need to bring in and you have somebody that's been through that a few times, that's very helpful. And so we want to help our students in that regard.
Of course. Wow. I love hearing any time that there's where you add certifications or things just like you're saying to further arm that student and have them prepared for launching into the workforce, because that's what we're here to do, right?
That's right.
They don't stay students forever. They go out and want to be gainfully employed and experience their own careers then. So that is fantastic. So do you have numbers of the growth of the program handy, or...
Well, the number changes almost weekly because students have a tendency to change majors.
Yes, they do.
Half of our students at C of O change majors at least once during their time there.
Okay, so that's a lot of change.
Which is understandable. You know, they're coming in and they get a feel for what they like or don't like, and they learn about programs they didn't know existed. Right now, our number is right at 64, which makes the Conservation Wildlife Management Program the fifth largest major on campus, and that number is about double what it was in 2020.
Okay, fantastic. So that's exciting, right?
It is. Mm-hmm. I think so. I think it's exciting. We have a lot of students that are interested in that program. I think it fits in very well with our region.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ozark region... Outdoors and outdoor pursuits are a really integral part of our culture. And so a lot of our students have a lot of interest in that, and they're able to go and serve society in a way that has real impacts on people and real impacts on the culture of the region.
Amazing. I love that. And it brings me to, I want to kind of back up just a little bit and go back in time with you and talk more about some things that you alluded to and some things that I know about you and find very encouraging. You didn't always have all of the degrees, all the letters behind your name, and that wasn't, you didn't really think that was your path.
No, I didn't. I certainly have a non-traditional path, and I don't know that I recommend it for everybody, but I will tell people that I have a GED and a PhD, and that's pretty unique, I think.
That is very unique.
I grew up in Pulaski County, Missouri. I've been all over the country, but I grew up in Pulaski County, which is near where Fort Leonard Wood is here, so in the Ozark region. And I never finished high school. I went to a small school in the area that was like kindergarten through 12th grade, was all in the same building, so a very small rural school. And at that time, this is a long time ago now, you know, more than 30 years ago, and at that time, there in that area, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on education, and not a lot of value placed on education. And I struggled with that as well, and I really liked being outside and hunting and fishing and trapping and all that type of stuff. And I really saw school as getting in the way of me doing
that. That old school was getting in the way of what you really wanted to be doing.
Yeah, that's right. And so I really wanted to do those sorts of things, and so I did. I just left school and I did that, and I enjoyed that. But I was doing things like cutting firewood and mowing lawns, that type of stuff. And I had being outdoors, a lot. I had some experiences with game wardens, and they were good experiences with game wardens. So this actually relates to fur bearers, because I've always had an interest in trapping fur bearers. And so the game warden would reach out to me when there were problems with beavers or otters or something like that, and I would help them out with those sorts of things. And I had some great experiences with them, and I started to think, wow, these guys make a career doing this and working with people and working outdoors. And I thought, well, maybe I could do that. And I really liked the idea of making sure that those sorts of opportunities were around for other people. Mm. So for me, that was a difficult time in my life for a variety of things. And being able to escape to the outdoors was very therapeutic for me, and probably kept me out of a lot of trouble chasing those sorts of things, as opposed to other vices. And I really like the idea of maybe I could be involved in making sure that these opportunities are around for other people. And it became obvious to me that you've got to go to school to do that. I didn't know that you'd have to go to college for 12 years, which is what ultimately I did. But
right.
I knew that you had to go to school. And so I took the GED.
Okay.
And
how was it?
I really don't recall a whole lot about it. So I remember not studying for it or anything. You just went in and took it. Yep. Just showed up and took it.
Okay.
And I did okay on that. And then I took the ACT because I wanted to try to go to University of Missouri, because they had a strong wildlife program at that time. Mm-hmm. I took the ACT, and somehow I did well enough to get into the University of Missouri.
Perfect.
So I did that. I went up to University of Missouri and enrolled in their wildlife management program there. And went to school for a very long time.
But yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it. And, when I went to University of Missouri, it was different. It was Columbia, Missouri. It was a whole lot different than Buckhorn, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big culture shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
And because I wasn't in school, that was very difficult for me, too. So, for example, I remember really struggling in English composition courses. And now I write things all the time. And I think I do very well. That actually served as editor for some journals and things. But at that time, I really struggled with that. And I remember talking to a professor who literally said to me, "This is what we would expect. You come from a part of the country that doesn't really speak English." So
harsh. Very harsh.
Pretty harsh.
How did you take that?
I took it as an insult, frankly. I think that that's a bias that society still accepts, is sort of putting down rural people and people that with Southern accents and that sort of thing. Like, it's okay to make fun of those. No other accents, no other cultures, but people will still make fun of that rural culture. And so I did. I took it as an insult, and ultimately I did fine. I was able.
Absolutely, you did.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I graduated from the University of Missouri, and I actually, when I graduated, I'd taken some classes for being able to go the medical route to leave that door open. Most of wildlife management, wildlife biology is biology, and so there's quite a bit of overlap. And so I sort of struggled with that a little bit of, do I want to go into medical school, or do I want to continue working in wildlife? And it sounds, I know it sounds kind of cliche, but ultimately I came to the reasoning that I can work on things that keep people alive, or I can work on things that make life worth living for people.
Mm.
And I really wanted to do that, to work on things that made life worth living for people. And I had an opportunity to work closely with a wildlife biologist in Columbia who was a great influence on me, a good Christian man. And ultimately, after working a little bit, after finishing with my bachelor's degree, I went back to the University of Missouri to earn my master's degree, working on river otters at the time. Mm-hmm. And then after graduating with my master's degree, I went and worked in the federal government for the Department of Agriculture at a facility called the National Wildlife Research Center. It's based in Fort Collins, Colorado, but they work across the country. And I worked on wildlife diseases at the time, so I still had a little bit of the medical side working on that.
Sure.
And I enjoyed that. I got to work all over the country, even some outside of the country, and I was able to see that if I wanted to continue in research, I could implement other people's research projects with a master's degree, or I could design my own if I had the terminal degree, the doctorate degree. And so I had an opportunity to go to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. So I left, you know, full-time permanent federal position, which was very difficult to do. You're earning a salary, and it's hard to get into the federal government to get into a permanent position. But there was an opportunity to go to Cornell. Cornell was working closely with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to enhance their fur bearer management program, to develop some new scientific tools to ensure sustainability of take of several different types of fur bearers, and that would be the focus of that doctoral work. And so that opportunity came up, and so I moved across the country and went to Ithaca, New York, and spent another, you know, 5 years out there working on a PhD.
Wow. I see some things that are really rising to the surface for me in this story. And one is sometimes you have to take a risk to go from good to great, or to go from where you are to that next level. Is it scary to take risks?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. And, you know, for me, I think there were smaller risks at first. And once the smaller risk worked out, I was willing to do larger risks. Mm-hmm. But really going from Buckhorn, Missouri to Columbia, that was a big risk. Looking back now, it's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's like 2.5 hour drive difference. But it was a big deal to move away from family, to go to, mm-hmm. to a new town. That was very risky, and it worked out very well. And through all these steps, I know that God was orchestrating all these things. And ultimately, I believe that all these steps were ultimately a path to bring me where I'm at now.
Amen. Amen.
Staying true to your mission and never wavering from your vision isn't for the short game. It takes years. In this case, more than 100. The Wall Street Journal says College of the Ozarks is in the nation's top 6% of colleges and universities based on the value of education and learning environment. The survey results show our students finish their degrees and earn more money. To find out more, visit cofo.edu today.
I just find so much hope in your story. I love, and I know you say you don't recommend that, you know, for everyone to just do the GED, but just to me, it is this little light, this little beacon of hope, just shining in the night for that person that thinks that they're labeled in some way and they can't achieve, or they can't excel, or they can't follow their passion. And you're just this great example of just shaking that off.
Well, one of the things I tell my students now is they'll come in and say, I'm interested in this or that. Maybe it's they want to be a duck biologist or something like that. And I'll tell them, if that's something you really, really want to do, you're going to do well at it, because it's your enthusiasm that makes you excel in mm-hmm. those things. And so if you're really enthusiastic about something, then mm-hmm. then pursue it. And the state needs to hire a duck biologist, and mm-hmm. so they're going to hire somebody.
Might as well
be you.
Yeah.
You know, if that's something
okay.
you really want to do, just that enthusiasm is going to shine through.
I love that. And that is what shines through with you. And that is the second thing that I was going to say, is finding your passion. And I just love talking with different professors and even Jim Freeman in our career center at College of the Ozarks, mm-hmm. and how we come along students in that journey, trying to understand and know not only what their passion is, but how can that be expressed, right? Like you say, sometimes they don't even know a certain major exists or a certain career exists. Would you find that to be true?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they... like in this field, in conservation wildlife management, I would say most of them, if they were to try to envision what that looks like, they think a game warden.
Mm-hmm.
Or they think, a ranger, like, well, they're probably too young to know who Yogi Bear was, but somebody like the ranger.
Unfortunately.
and there's a whole lot more to that. There's so much more to that. And they might see these really front-facing positions, but not all the other positions behind that.
Sure.
And it's unreasonable to think that they would know what that is at that point. So,
right.
I really like that. I like to, when I work with my students, I'll point them towards job boards,
mm-hmm.
up where those sorts of jobs are posted, and encourage them. You can't apply now. You're a freshman, or maybe even a high schooler thinking about coming to school here. But take a look at these jobs. And find two or three of them that you think, man, I'd really like to do that. And then scroll to the bottom of that announcement and see what degree they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And
what are the requirements?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we'll help you get there. But find something that you like, and we'll help you figure out the path to get there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is so cool. Do you teach any lower level, entry level college courses?
I do. Yep. I teach a little bit less than most professors because of some of the other responsibilities I have, but I teach I do teach from our entry level courses, which are 100 level courses.
Mm-hmm.
So in academics we use all these weird terms, but 100 level means that it's a freshman course, and 200 sophomore, 300 junior, 400 senior. So I teach 100 level courses all the way up through the 400 level courses.
What 100 level courses do you teach?
Well, I just finished teaching general zoology. So that's biology 114 at the school.
Okay.
And so that's what we call a survey course, which is when a student's done with that course, we don't expect them to be an expert, but we expect them to have a really sort of an idea of what that field is.
Okay.
And so it's like an introduction to these different topics, with the idea that if they find something that really strikes them, then they can dig into that a little bit deeper.
Okay. That makes sense. And then that is your open door for some of those conversations, right?
Yeah.
With students who maybe are looking to really zero in on what their path is.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. And something else unique about College of the Ozarks is different from most institutions is our professors serve as academic advisors to our students. So if you were to look at Mizzou or Cornell or a school like that, they're set up more like almost like a high school counselor type of system, where there's somebody that works with hundreds of students, and they have sort of formulas of what they put them into. And here at College of the Ozarks, our professors serve that role. So we have the number of students might vary from two or three that a professor is working with all the way up to 60. Our highest one is 60. And I'm towards the upper end. I have about 40 students that I work with. But that gives me an opportunity to sit down with them every semester. We sit down and talk about their courses, talk about if it's the right major for them, what challenges that they're having, and what their career goals are, and to try to help get them towards that. So I think that's a really important role for our professors. I find it very satisfying to do that. It takes extra time to do that, but you get to know your students a whole lot better than just having them in a zoology class.
Right, right. 40 students, that's a lot of advising. So does that process kind of go on just constantly all throughout the semester, or is it, hey, I'm getting ready to put my spring schedule together and I need to meet with you?
Well, a little bit of both. So all of our professors are going to have what's called office hours. So there's a set time that our students can look at and know that professor is going to be in their office, so they can just stop in to talk to them. And so all of our professors have office hours, and so students will pop in with various questions or issues they might have. They also meet with their advisor when they are putting together their spring or fall schedule, and their advisor has to sign off on that form.
Ah,
so
gotcha.
It's sort of some of our students really want to talk to us, some of them don't, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. that sort of compels all of them to come in and see us face to face.
That's fantastic. So this brings me to something that I like to talk a lot about when we're talking about College of the Ozarks, because we are an accredited liberal arts college with a lot to offer, and we have a lot of accolades that come out yearly from U.S. News and World Report, Wall Street Journal, Washington Monthly, very, very credible sources that are really lauding the excellence, the level of excellence in teaching at our institution. And I love to celebrate that. I love to try to educate people about that. But everything that you're saying funnels into that. It's why you see that number one best undergraduate teaching from U.S. News and World Report. Yep. Our professors care.
They
spend a lot of time with our students, and I feel like our mission and our vision also play into that as we are developing students of Christ-like character. So talk to me a little bit about that. I know you mentioned early on that mission and vision drew you to the college. How do you think that really impacts the teaching?
Well, I think it works its way in almost every aspect of our teaching. So every time I see those recognitions from outside entities, that's always very rewarding too. And all of those will recognize a school, not an individual. So it's the school, the administrators, the faculty. Faculty is one of those college terms that means people that teach. Mm-hmm. The staff. It's everybody working mm-hmm. together to be able to get those sort of accolades. And a couple other sort of college terms that are in there is this idea of an accredited institution, mm-hmm. and you'll hear that. And what that means is that an outside independent entity looks at what a school is doing and has some sort of standards that school needs to meet, so that we know that if you went to school at institution X and it's accredited, and you went to institution Y and it's accredited, it should be similar. There should mm-hmm. be some similarities there. And that's really important because if you look at job announcements, most of them will say, the ones that require a college degree will say a bachelor's degree or master's degree or whatever from an accredited institution. So it's really important to have that accreditation. We are a liberal arts college, and often I think that term is misinterpreted. That has nothing to do with politics. Doesn't mean liberal politics or conservative
right.
politics. It actually goes back to Greek origins, which is where even the term academia comes from, is academe and scholarly pursuits. And the liberal arts were those things that free people could study. Mm. They had the luxury of studying. And so we are an accredited liberal arts institution. The idea of working with students that are worthy, might not have the financial resources, to me, that's very important. And coming from a rural area, there are a lot of people that don't think college is for them because college is expensive. And, mm-hmm. You know, I had student loans until I was 45 years old, paying student loans until I was 45. Went to school a long time, but, you know, that slows you down on what you can do if you have this burden of debt. And so our students are worthy students that leave the institution without that burden of debt. Mm. And that allows them to do other things. And I think that's where the developing students of Christ-like character plays in, is that we want our students to go into the workforce. We want them to serve society, to serve their employers, to serve their families, and to do so with Christ-like character. So I often describe it as I'm hoping to train tent makers, and that relates to Paul, the Apostle Paul. Mm-hmm. The Apostle Paul was a tent maker. That we know him today because of the work that he did in early Christianity. But the reason he was able to do that is because he had the ability to support himself. And so I think we work with students and help them to do that so that they can turn any place into a mission field. If they're in elementary education or psychology or conservation, that's going to open doors where they can go and they can be missionaries in those areas. I think that's really important in government. And in my program, most people are going to end up in government at some level or another. About 80% of those positions are in government. And so I find that very appealing, the idea of working with students. So they're professionally capable, but they'll go into government and they'll shine the light of Christ within government, which we really, really need that in government, mm-hmm. at all levels of government.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I could not agree more to have students with the opportunity to graduate with no debt. It just frees them up. They can serve as ministers, missionaries, preachers, teachers, and not have that burden of debt. I don't know how some young people do it, graduating from different colleges, and they have all of this debt. They're wanting to serve. They have the heart to serve, but they really can't.
Or even the pressures from home. You know, if they're coming from a rural area, an economically disadvantaged area, I guarantee you there's students that come from those areas and go off to college that take all sorts of grief of why are you spending so much money? You're going into debt to go to school. And here, that argument sort of falls away because it doesn't cost them. They work. They still work, and they work very hard for it, but they don't leave with that debt.
That's right. They work as part of the work education program.
That's right.
Which even in and of itself, I feel like helps prepare our young people for the workforce and for their adult life, prepares them for adulting.
It does.
Because they learn all of these lessons of just working hard, work ethic, showing up on time,
right.
How to work with others in a work setting. You know, it's.
Oh, I think that's incredibly important. I think our work education program is very beneficial to our students. So I think many of them realize that after they leave, just how important that was for them.
But, sure.
You know, I talked about in my career, I hired a lot of people. And when you hire people, the other side of that is sometimes you have to let people go. And I think back to instances where I was involved in those sorts of decisions. And most of the time, that's not because of somebody lacking technical skills, right? It's a sort of soft skills area that didn't work out and causes employment problems for them. And so our work education program really helps them with those soft skills, like showing up to work on time. How do you deal with conflict at work? And those are the areas that cause people problems down the road if they don't get it figured out. And we provide opportunities for our students to explore that. If they don't do well, there's opportunities to correct that. Whereas in the workforce, you often don't have that opportunity to correct those issues. So I think our work education program is really unique and is really beneficial to our students.
That's right. We are an official work college.
That's right.
So there's only 9 in the nation that are designated as that. And I agree. It's wonderful that they get that feedback. They have a workstation supervisor that gives them the feedback, and they actually get a grade in their work.
That's right. Yeah, that's. I'm also a work supervisor.
Oh my goodness! Okay, let's add that here to the list.
I have students that I work with, and we interact with each other on a daily basis. But at least twice during the semester, we sit down and go through a midterm grade, and we go through a final grade, and we talk about all the things that are going well, and then opportunities for improvement as well.
Wonderful, wonderful.
I think the Christian mission of our school is very appealing. Let me give you a quick example of how I work that into my program. Mm-hmm. So in my program, if you went to study something similar in any other institution, they're going to talk a lot about something called the North American model of wildlife conservation. And that's this really well-established theory that guides what we do in the United States and Canada. I actually published some work on that as it relates to fur bearers. And one of the – there's seven different components to that. One of them is something called the public trust doctrine. And that's the idea that wildlife resources are not owned by individuals. And they're not owned by governments either, that they're ultimately owned by the public. So the deer that are running around in your backyard, you can't just shoot them whenever you want to because you don't own them. The public owns them. Similarly, if you're driving home and you hit a deer, the state's not going to fix your car for you because you hit their deer. The state doesn't own them either. They're operating this trustee relationship where they're acting as trustees of a public resource. And so we'll talk about that, but so will every other institution. We'll talk about that. We take that a step further in that those wild resources, while they're the public's and serving the public is a very worthy thing to do, very honorable to do, ultimately they're a gift from God. In that what we're doing in managing those resources is acting as a steward of the gifts that God has given us. And we know from the creation account, we see this line after things were created that God looked and saw it was good. And so when we're managing those resources, keeping those resources around, allowing people to use them as appropriate, conservation's wise use. It's not preservation, it's wise use. We're helping to maintain what God deemed as good. And we'll incorporate that into our program. I don't think there's very, very many secular institutions that would do that.
No, absolutely. So, man, no matter what topic or what field of study, to know that our professors are incorporating that Christian worldview, that is phenomenal. And I hear a lot of feedback from our admissions team and our admissions side of things that there are young people really, really hungry and really looking for a Christian college to attend. And man, that's C of O.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, there's another role, and I can see in all of the knowledge that you have about College of the Ozarks overall and your passion for the students and even for how the college operates, that's being put to good use in your role as Assistant Dean of Academic Programs, and that is something relatively new for you. And tell us a little bit about that and what work you're doing in that role.
Well, yes, that's some of the administrative responsibilities I have. I'm fortunate to be able to work alongside our talented faculty that we have. So at College of the Ozarks, we have around 100 full-time faculty. And so in that role, I get to work a lot with our faculty. And I do various administrative things, but one of the stronger emphasis there is stewardship of our resources. So, you know, it takes money to do anything, and all the money that comes into College of the Ozarks is primarily from donors that believe in our mission. And so we want to make sure that we're using those resources, those financial resources and our human resources as wisely as possible. And so in that role, I get to work with our faculty to help ensure that we're using our resources wisely. I also strive to tie our academic pillar with the other pillars of the college. So we talked about the work education program, for example. That's our vocational pillar. And our pillars, we want them to be pillars that are connected. We don't want them to be silos that never touch each other. And so we're working on some initiatives to better tie those pillars together.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Great work. Wow.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I love just how everything is your roles and your even your influence on campus. It just seems to be growing. And I know so much of that is from just God has brought you to the place where he wanted you and has used everything that has gone before. And that's how he does. And he's so faithful to do that. He never leaves anything to the side. I feel like it's nothing is a waste. When you're following the Lord,
yep.
and he brings that, you know, it says all things work together for the good of those who serve God. And so we see that work out in our lives. And it brings me to really a final thought and a question that I wanted to give to you and have you reflect on. And that is for maybe that person who has been listening to this and they're considering applying to come to College of the Ozarks, but they feel in some way they don't know if they'll be accepted. They don't know if they meet the criteria. They don't really know what they want to do. They're unsure about all these things. What would you say to encourage that person?
Well, the first thing I would do would say that it's okay to have questions. It's okay to not know exactly what you want to do. And, you know, those students are 17, 18 years old. And as you and I know, when you're 25, you don't really know what you want to do. So it's okay to have questions like that. And I encourage students to earnestly seek God's will.
Amen.
And if you earnestly seek God's will, he's going to open doors and he's going to close doors as appropriate. And some of those doors, when they're closed, it may be very disappointing at the time. And I've had many doors that have closed on me too. And but he's also going to open doors. And so if you're wondering if you want to come to College of the Ozarks and you're just scared that it's not a good fit, then come visit us. Come visit us or submit an application and see what God has in store for you.
Amen.
You know, our students, our goal when our students graduate, we want all of our students to graduate about the same level. But unlike other institutions, our students come in at different levels. Right, some of them are coming from Buckhorn, Missouri, in the early 90s, and like they, and some of them might come from other areas with a stronger emphasis on education. We recognize that the starting point is going to be different for a lot of students. Our goal is that the ending point is the same for them all.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and I do know that our professors come alongside those students and really commit. There's a lot of programs, and we could talk a whole nother hour about some of those programs, but that is certainly something that the college is committed to. So I love that. There's beauty in that. So everyone listening, be encouraged. My theme for this season is hope. And in everything that you've said today, I just feel like that is the theme that is laced throughout. There's hope. Just because one thing didn't work out, there's going to be another door that opens. Find your passion. Find what you're passionate about and pursue it with all your heart. And God is good. He's faithful. He'll bless it.
That's right. So, and I know that's harder to see when you're young. You know, just
it is.
When you're 18 years old, you haven't had that many doors closed on you to see how ultimately it's worked towards the glory of God. And so when those doors close, it can be very discouraging, whatever that might be. When you're my age, you've had several doors closed, and you can look back and see how it's worked out. But I have the luxury of time to be able to do that. And so I recognize that when you're young, it's difficult to see that. But we're told to trust in God. And if we earnestly seek God's will, and we do all things to the glory of God, then whatever happens is going to glorify God.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Well, to end on a lighter note and to find out a little bit more about you, if you were to visit the college creamery this afternoon and stop by for a little ice cream, what is your favorite kind of ice cream at the creamery?
Well,
you don't eat ice cream.
I do.
Okay.
Eat ice cream. You know, one of the roles I have at the school also is working with our agriculture department. So
sure.
I get to see that process from the beginning. It's pretty neat. So, which is such, that's so unique.
Isn't it? It's for a college to have a dairy farm, a beef farm, a hog farm. That's a lot, too. That's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes.
It is. And, you know, the dairy that ties into the ice cream question is literally 100 yards down the road from where our agriculture building is, where our agriculture classes are taught. And so, you know, our students are able to literally sit in class to learn about a dairy issue. There's a dairy class that's next semester. And so those students will spend some time in a classroom in the Youngman Agricultural Building on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be able to walk 100 yards down the road and actually see it, which is really a blessing.
It's incredible.
Yeah. But I like the ice cream with caramel in it. So I think they call that Bobcat Tracks or something.
There's a Bobcat
like that.
Crunch that's
Bobcat
chocolate.
Crunch. Okay.
Do you like the chocolate one?
Yes.
And I love salted caramel is where I thought you were going with that.
Yep.
And they actually, hint, they need to bring that flavor back. So no pressure. Yeah. But anyway, well, Dr. Roberts, thank you for taking some time and talking to our listeners. And I really hope for everyone out there that there's something in this that's encouraging to them. That's the point of all of this. And just to point everything back to Christ, our Lord and Savior, and he's a way maker.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. So if you are interested in finding out more about College of the Ozarks, you would like to apply or just find out more about our programs, visit cofo.edu online. And we hope that you find something that inspires you there, or give us a call and we'd be more than happy to talk with you about College of the Ozarks. Thank you.